Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Joy Marie.
And Courtney.
Welcome back. We're back with a new episode of Job Blogs, your candid career conversations with your group chat girlfriends.
That's right. And coming up, we have a great episode for you with Samantha Josephette, an architect and the founder of Studio 397 Architecture. So she's going to give us an inside look at making it in the world of architecture and how to bring the power of focus and minimalism to our lives.
Yeah, it's definitely a great conversation. But first, you guys know we like to start every episode with a clock in. Mm-hmm. This is a segment of the show where we check in on each other, we catch up on what's going on in the world, politics, business, more, and encourage you to do the same with your group chat girlfriends. Courtney, how are you? What's going on?
I'm doing good. There's a lot happening. I always say, like, I view life in, like, peaks and valleys. Yeah. And I do definitely feel like I'm in a valley situation. There's just lots of challenges happening. And it's interesting because I think this year has kind of been my peak year. Like 2018, like while the world was burning, I was just like, everything is fabulous. And I was wondering where like this valley was going to come from, because you know it's going to come. So it's arrived. But I kind of impressed with how I'm viewing it. Like, it's a reminder that challenging times are when you learn those lessons and when you have that growth. It's like that doesn't happen when everything's like honky-dory.
Yeah.
So it's like a necessary part of life. It's a necessary part of life. And just kind of leaving room for, like, you know, miracles to happen, and whatever your faith is, just like for that higher power to step in and like getting your faith strong and just being able to look outside myself, you know, balancing that faith with like that cautious, like, let me make sure every step of the way is cool. And
like having ownership over what you can control, but then
come through,
surrendering the rest.
Amen.
Oh, well, I hope, you know, you're able to work through that at some point. The upside is that we know it doesn't last forever, the valleys.
That's right.
I feel you. They can be rough.
So eyes on the prize, because I'm claiming right now, like, getting married in the spring, and we're going to be out of this.
Yes. I'm with you, girl.
Okay, what about you?
I'm good. I would say I had a pretty neutral year. I wouldn't call it either, like, a peak or a valley. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think it was really self-reflective, introspective, as you all know. And I think there have been a few key things that I'm walking away from as we're wrapping up the year. One is really just like how we speak over our lives impacts what we see, which I believe impacts our future as well. It's something, you know, I've heard said from a few speakers I admire. But, you know, to that end, I'm just giving a lot less airtime to complaining, to comparison. And that's not to negate that I feel things and I'm impacted by things people do to me or things that I even might do to myself. Mm-hmm. But I just think, like, choosing not to make that the center of my relationships or make like misery the focal point of my conversations with friends has been very intentional because
very hard to do
that's
New
not
York.
What I want to manifest.
Very hard to do in New York, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
The city of cynicism, but go ahead.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, that's kind of for this next season, that's kind of not what I want to take with me. So I'm trying to give it a little less life. You know, I took a little bit of a hiatus from social media. It's just been a few weeks at the time we're recording this episode, but planning to go strong till the new year. That's been really refreshing and like a necessary reset because I do personally spend a ton of time on Instagram in particular. So I've been, as an introvert, I've been, and don't debate me, I've been refocusing.
Oh, shut up.
Refocusing that energy on, you know, if I think about somebody, let me hit them up or shoot them a FaceTime or ask them to do coffee so we can actually catch up versus kind of passively engaging with my friends. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's been kind of fun. Reading more, just like doing, reconfiguring my morning routine, try to be more intentional about my time.
Yeah. So how are you feeling with this new lo-fi life?
It's been really great. It's been very good. I feel like I am starting to set myself up for new, like my New Year's resolutions. Mm-hmm. Really great because I'm starting to basically act on all the areas I want to prioritize as resolutions. So, you know, I think a lot has shifted in me and I think I've changed a bit this year. And even though my circumstances fluctuate, I feel really grounded. So I'm very grateful for that.
That's wonderful. That's like the perfect way to go into a new year.
Yeah, I think so.
Awesome. Well, let's get into the show.
Let's do it. All right, now it's time for Rants, Raves, and Reviews. This is the segment of the show where we highlight products, services, tools, or experiences that we're currently loving or hating in our professional lives. Courtney, you're up. What are you doing today?
I am raving. I think we've talked about this a few times on the show before, but it's really coming to life for me, and that's accountability partners. Mm. So I am trying to get in shape for the wedding, and it is just the bane of my existence. Like, I just hate it so much. I hate it. There are a few things that I hate more than working out and thinking about what I eat. I hate it. So I've been kind of stagnant. I feel like I've been engaged since March, and I've been thinking about this since March, and I've been procrastinating about it since March. So we're down to the wire now. I'm starting to like be a little bit better about it, and I think it's completely because people holding me accountable. Yeah. So shout out to Erin for bringing her crazed workout lifestyle. She killed me almost once, but I forgive her. It's necessary. Shout out to my fiance for like sending me threatening text messages that I ask him to send me to like right around like 7 o'clock. Just like hit me up like, what are you doing, you lazy bum? Go somewhere.
Listen, whatever works
for you. Whatever works. So yeah, I think we just like try... At least for me, I'm not a very disciplined person. I never use that as an adjective for myself. Or just so having a community of people to like support you and like share things with that you want to accomplish. It makes it so much easier.
That's great. I love that. Shouts to
you. Yeah. And all the little people like sharing their fitness journey on Instagram. Not so much you like rise and grind people who are just like very, you know, aspirational, unattainable. But the people who are like... Oh my God, I hate this, but I'm going. I see you. I'm your tribe.
I really love this trend on stories of people tagging their friends in their morning workout too. Like you tag like 5 people and then they work out and they tag 5
right.
more.
Like,
I love
it. Yeah, so it's like friendly peer pressure.
Yeah. Okay. I'm with it. I love it.
Okay. Joy, what are you doing?
In a very similar vein, you know, and I took a peek at yours before the show. I want to shout out people doing the self-work, like people really, really doing the self-work. Shout out to my accountability partner, Yunori, and good friend. We have weekly conversations for hours on end about this. And really like what comes out of those is that real self-care and self-love is painful. Mm. It's like, it's really about taking a mirror to yourself, looking at your flaws and weaknesses, and recognizing your own role and the role that your choices have played in your own circumstances. And that's not to negate the life that you might have lived and the pain that you might have experienced. But like, I feel like it's really about what you can do and what you can own. And that's tough. That's like, it can be really, really rough. But I feel like what that does is make for, it sets you up for better relationships in work, better communication, better partnerships romantically. You know, it helps you to see habits and behaviors that aren't serving you in order to clear room for the things that can help you better align with your purpose. So just shout out to everyone that's doing that, because it's hard and it's intentional. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't happen by accident. Like, people don't just like wake up and they're, you know, happy people that communicate well and, you know, are forgiving. Yeah. Like, that all takes work to kind of undo things that maybe have made you not like that.
Yeah.
And I can always tell people who aren't doing the work, because it's like, and I'm able to extend more grace to them now, because I'm like, if you're snippy at work for no reason, like, that's because you got some healing to do, sis. So I'm going to forgive you for snapping at me right now, because I am evolved. But, you know, it helps you to be able to see when other people are maybe like still working through that stuff in their own journey.
Yeah, I love that. I think that reminds me of a quote I love. I forgot who said it, but basically the idea that happiness is a choice, and like, it's never just a natural state. Like, you have to choose to do it. So,
yeah.
Amazing.
So shouts to y'all.
So we have a treat for you all this week. We have Samantha Josephette in the studio. Welcome, hi, Samantha.
Hello, hello.
So I wanted Samantha to come in because, one, I have never met a Black female architect.
Me neither. Wow.
And I wasn't surprised because when you sent over your bio. So Samantha is the architect and the founder of Studio 397 Architecture, part of a mere 0.3% of Black female architects registered in the United States.
Wow.
There's a point before the 3%. She is the 397th living Black female architect to be licensed. That is crazy to me.
What? I know. That's like smaller than a high school graduating class sometimes.
Yeah.
Bonkers. So she has experience in corporate interiors, residential, retail, transportation, and recreational architecture. And by building herself a valuable network of resources, she continues to shape her path to a more minimal and sustainable future. She's also the president-elect of New York's chapter of National Organization of Minority Architects. And this past March, some of her work was exhibited at the United Nations Visitor Center as part of an initiative to champion diversity. Yay. And she also currently has work on display at the New York City Center for Architecture as a finalist for the Times Square Valentine Heart Design Competition. So that's an architect with a slay.
Subtle
we
slay.
Love it. We love it.
Not
love
even
it.
Subtle. Like, so impressive. That's insane.
Yeah, it's crazy hearing my bio. I'm like, oh.
Right. Dang. What does it feel like to be like a unicorn?
It's crazy because sometimes I don't feel like a unicorn because I'm actually surrounding myself around other unicorns.
Mm.
So it's like I'm kind of used to being a go-getter because everyone around me is a go-getter. And it's so weird when I hear people say, like, you're the first Black architect I know or Black female architect, because I'm like, they're everywhere. There's so many of us. But it's because I'm so used to my network, and we, you know, encourage each other so much, and we like self-promote each other and stuff like that. And so I get so used to being around them that I forget we're still like a unicorn out of the entire, you know,
population. Well, hopefully this conversation opens someone, you know, more exposure to someone else who's listening.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Anyone interested in architecture, anyone in architecture right now, anyone questioning whether they should stay in architecture.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
We're going to get into it. And I think one of the big things I've been wanting to talk about on the show, too, is to bring someone who has a lot of experience in design and design thinking, because I think that process lends itself a lot to just no matter your field, life in general, personal, professional, just about how to have that focus that you need.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree with that, because I did study more graphic and digital design in school, and I just feel like, especially like with space, like there's something around organizing space, organizing objects that does translate to me to organizing information, organizing projects, like kind of being process oriented.
Exactly. Like, I find myself designing any and everything. Like, I could look at a sign on the street and be like, they should have put the person and the dog on the left side instead of the top right side. Or I could just be in a space, like, I was you know, in here, and I was looking for the windows and certain things. It was just like, yeah. Oh, I wonder what part of the building are we in right now?
Interesting. So before we dive into that design thinking conversation, tell us a little bit about like what goes into being an architect, because I feel like we think we know, but we probably.
Where do I begin? Let's just begin when you're in high school trying to decide if you want to be an architect or not. When you're looking to apply to schools, know that you have to apply to the architecture program. That was like my first mistake I made, because I thought, oh, once I get to college, I could choose my major when I'm a sophomore, because that's what I was always told. And I got to college and I was telling everybody, yeah, I'm an architect major. And then the counselor was like, no, you're not.
It was crazy.
And I was just like, what do you mean? And she's just like, there's an architecture program. I'm like, oh, okay. I just thought I had to just buy the books. I had to apply to the architecture program. And because it's such a rigorous program, it's a 5-year program that only starts in the fall semester. So I had to apply to the program, submit a portfolio, get accepted, and then start the following fall. But even just that process was like a life lesson in itself, because at first I got a rejection letter and I was just like, dang, I didn't get into the architecture program. And so I went to the School of Engineering and they were telling me about all the different engineering majors, and I was just like, it's just not clicking. And so then I went to someone in the architecture program that I knew, and I was like, I didn't get into the architecture program. And he was just like, what are you talking about? Yeah, you did. And I was like, no, I didn't. I got the rejection letter. And he happened to call the I think it was the dean of the architecture program at the time, and as he's on the phone with him, he was like, yeah, she's in the program. And I was just standing there like, what in the world? Like, and so I started freaking out. I was like, shut up. And so it was just crazy, because I was so persistent and I was kind of determined to figure something out, whether I was going to get into the architecture program or not. Me being able to follow up actually got me like the result that I actually wanted. So
that's a word.
That was my first lesson on persistence and following through. Yeah.
And what kind of kept you through that? Because I'd love to hear a little bit about the rigor of that program, and maybe even, you know, I'm not familiar at all after the program, certifications, anything that you had to kind of get to get that architect
so
status.
So while I was in the 5-year program, it was pretty tough, because when I entered school, and at the time I was coming from Georgia, going to a school up north, and so like that was a culture shock, and then like everyone in my program, that was a culture shock. Like I just felt like I was completely different. And so like between like, you know, communicating with my colleagues or trying to communicate with the professors, like everything was a learning lesson. And then I had to learn architecture on top of that. And I had to teach my grandmother how to pronounce architecture. So it was just like, it was like lesson after lesson. And so that was a 5-year program. And the way I focused was I put on my headphones and I put my music on blast. Like, like I was just like so focused when I was like, you know, working on my projects. And I know sometimes I annoyed people because they could hear my reggae from outside of my headphones. But I did build a friendship with my classmates, because we saw each other for so long. Like every day we saw each other for 5 days straight. You know, one of our classes were like 4-hour long classes. And then even after the class, we had to still stay in studio and like do work. And so you kind of want to have a relationship with your classmates. Sometimes it's hard, again, because it's a culture clash, but eventually you get through that. But another thing that I did was I got involved with other student organizations outside of the architecture program, because, you know, in my class, it was only 2 Black people. It was me and one other girl. And so I felt like I needed a sense of home and community that looked like me, that understood my background, so that I didn't always feel like an outcast. And so I joined student organizations to get to know other classmates. One thing that did work for me, because I was a change of major student and I had that first year of not being in the architecture program, I made friends. And so a lot of times my classmates, all they knew were, you know, our class. And so I was, I guess, fortunate enough to build friendships before I even got into the architecture program. So they would, you know, pull me out every so often.
So it was really interesting when you told me before how, like, after you do this 5-year program, then you're doing, it's not done. Like, you're still not, like, an
architect.
That's
just the first hurdle. You're like, I made it through the 5-year program. Okay, now I got to find a job. along with trying to find a job, you have to think about, okay, if I'm going to go through with architecture, do I want to become a licensed architect? Because being a licensed architect, you could either go out on your own, or you could, you know, move up the corporate ladder eventually. In order to sit for your license, you either have to, A, graduate from an accredited 5-year program, or graduate from an accredited master's program, or get grandfathered in by like working under other architects for a certain amount of years. Mm-hmm. And so once you checked one of those boxes, you also have to gain professional experience in order to sit for your exams. And so usually that's like a 2 to 3 year process. But thankfully in New York State, they allow you to gain those credits while taking your exams. And so I took advantage of that because my student loans was out the roof. And so I was just like, I can't afford grad school. I need to get this experience. And so what I did was I went out and I started working in the professional world. And I just right away started studying for my exams. Mm-hmm. The first exam I took was actually not for my architecture license. It was just a sustainability certification. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to take that test to be like somewhat of a tester on like test taking and stuff like that. I got to know the Prometric Center, and I will never go to that place ever again.
Sounds intense.
Yeah, they have a couple offices in New York City where people take like their bar. I don't know if they take their bar exams, but I know they take like their CPA exams there and like all these other random exams. And so, yeah, basically you have to gain professional experience and get licensed. And it's not just one test. It's seven different. Well, when I was taking it was 7 different tests. I think it's 6 tests now. And so.
Yeah. So as you say all this, like, it just strikes me that like you have to be so focused and committed to one thing for so long. And I feel like going to college is like people are like dipping in and out of majors. They're like finding themselves. Yeah. How do you like, did you ever have a temptation to like want to try something else, or you're just like, oh, I'm in it, so I'm not gonna finish? Like, what's the
I think I was so caught up with all the work that I had to do that I didn't even have time to like it was just like, if I think about trying to change my major, I'm gonna fail this class because this deadline is in 2 days. And like every week we had a big project due, and like the requirements in these projects, I used to be like, yo, these professors are like rude as hell. Like they're insane. Like this is not possible. And I mean, sometimes you would check things off the list, everything off the list, and sometimes you wouldn't, but like what they would want you to produce in a week, you'd just be like, what planet are you living on?
Yeah.
And so
I guess, it was funny because I was thinking the exact same thing as you were speaking, because I feel like we haven't really had a lot of folks on this show who do have to be that prescriptive in their paths, whether that's medical or architecture or even law. And I just like, you know, I admire it. So number one, kudos to you.
Oh, man. I admire it now. But before I was just like, I done screwed myself over. Like, I'm stuck.
You made it. You're here. But I mean, I'd love to know, like, in balance with that, like, technical, like, focus and getting through the work, what inspired you and drew you to the profession overall? And, you know, even when you look at culture, like, what inspires you? What are the influences and the influence of architecture that, you know, is inspiring you and motivating you to kind of make your contribution to the field?
It's funny because when people ask me this, I usually hear other architects say all these fancy, elaborate explanations. And my explanation is very simple. My mom, we moved to Georgia and we were living in apartments for a couple of years. And then she was able to purchase a house. And so we were going house hunting. Mm. And out of me and my other sisters, I was always the one going house hunting with my mom. And so every time we stepped into a house, I was just like, why would someone do this? Why would someone, like, that doesn't make sense. And I was just like, oh, I gotta, you know, design spaces or whatever, because I know how to figure this out or whatever. And then, like, while I was in school, I realized I actually been designing all my life, but I didn't realize I was designing. Again, like, I'd be in the car, you know, dropping my grandmother off to work with my grandfather, and I'm, like, looking at everything outside of the car window, just, like, reimagining it in a different way or whatever. And so it was, like I said, not until, like, halfway through school, I realized, like, oh, I've been designing for the longest.
Yeah.
And so the reason why I say, like, oh, this is a simple answer and it's not elaborate, because, you know, architecture is such an elite profession that, like, most people that know about architecture are already exposed to it. And so, like, they'll say, like, oh, I knew this architect growing up, or, you know, I've heard about, you know, this famous architect. And it's just like, no, I didn't know any of that. Like, I barely even knew how to pronounce architecture. It was just a simple, like, I figured, like, why can't I redesign something? And I don't even know, like, I didn't even say the word architecture. I remember going to a professor saying, I want to design buildings. I didn't even know it was called architecture. She had mentioned to me, well, take this 3D drafting class. And so I took that one 3D drafting class in high school. And she also told me, when you start the architecture program, try to join a sorority because it's a predominantly white male profession. I didn't even have time to join a sorority. So I was, when I say, like, I was, like, barely making it through the program, but I was making it. All I just needed to make it. When graduation came, like, my whole entire family came up. Like, it was so funny because, like, you know, everyone's graduating and it's like everyone with two or three people in their family. I had like 20 people come to my graduation because they
celebrate the victory.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So you're a self-described minimalist. And you came in here, you had like very chic, very simple. I live for your style.
Oh, thanks.
So what is the benefit? That's like a less is more approach to life. So what is the benefit, I guess, of doing less in a world that encourages us to do the most? Like, everyone's expected to do all the things. But you've, like, I mean, even, like, yes, that's your style, but also, like, in your life, you've, like, focused on being great at this thing.
Because I always wanted to be efficient because it cost more not to be efficient. And I didn't have I didn't have the money to, like, do all this and that. And I, again, it's so weird because, like, when I, like, look at how I am now and look back to, like, have I always been like this? I realize, like, I've been practicing minimalism since the longest or whatever. Like, from when we were in college, like, everyone was always running to Starbucks. And I was like, I'll drink water out the water fountain because it's cheaper or whatever. And I would say, like, growing up, everyone always was like, oh, I want a mansion, I want this and that. And I was like, look, I need a simple, you know, small unit of a condo. I would say condo because I didn't want to own. I was like, because I won't have to have as much cleaning products. Okay. I won't have to spend so much time on cleaning. So I'm always, like, connecting an activity or, you know, a purchase to, like, just downsizing on the amount of work that I have to do. Like, again, being efficient. And so, I apply that to everything professionally and, you know, how I go about my personal life. But being able to focus allowed me to be minimalist in my, like, and how I socialize with people. Like, I was just like, okay, like, I got my circle of friends and I could only see them. Like, I can't see anybody else. Like, no new friends was, like, for 4 years. Like, I was just like, I'll catch you in 5 years because I really, like, can't.
So how do you, like, apply that? Whether it's, like, in when you're designing a building or kind of designing your career, how do you choose, like, what stays, what goes?
Oh, that takes time. Like, whether it's, like, interior design and you're looking at materials, like, sometimes I'll have, like, a lot of materials in front of me and then, like, I'll walk away and come back just to say, okay, like, what can I lose? Or, I, like, you know, I take things up, I take things out of the mix slowly, but I try to throw in, like, all of my ideas and then I say, like, you know, I try to have hierarchy to them and say what's more important than the next. So that's how I approach it with design, but also with architecture, just with, like, building systems in particular, and a lot of architects are taking this route, but, like, trying to build more passively where it's like, okay, we're in New York, the sun rises in the east, your windows, like, if like all the activities you would do in the evening, you would want on the west side because that's where the sun is setting.
Okay.
And all your activities you would do in the morning, you would want on the east side because that's where the sun is rising. And so you use less artificial lighting because you could use, you know, the sun. Also, like, just the type of glazing you use or the type of windows you have in a building, like, it allows you to, it allows for light to transmit into the space, but not the heat. And so it keeps the air cool. And, like, if you're in the Caribbean or the desert, like, you kind of place these openings in the wall in a particular way to allow breeze to come in so you don't need, like, an AC unit or a heater and stuff like that.
It's all about solving problems, like,
strategically. But what I do like about, like, being sustainable with architecture, you could teach it to people who aren't architects. And, like, I feel like everyone could be an architect. You have to have all these certifications in, like, the States or, you know, a few other countries, but you can still architect your life, architect the space you live in, and work with the architect. You need an architect to say, like, okay, this is how I move around my space. I know I need these particular materials. It's just, like, it's weird. Like, architecture sounds complicated when you're looking at a set of drawings, but if you just take a step back, and I have to tell myself this all the time too, but, like, just actually try to make sense out of it, like, and not get too technical, you're like, oh, I get it. We're using concrete to store the heat because the place is too hot or whatever. So.
Okay, Joy. So, I'm hearing prioritizing.
Yes.
And then I'm also hearing working with the things that you can't change rather than trying to force something.
Yeah. I mean, for a while, architects have been trying to design buildings to, like, keep out the natural world. But it's more sustainable to just work with the natural elements. It's less building systems, which means less money.
So you've also stepped out and started your own architecture firm as well.
Yes, I did.
I'd love to hear a little bit about kind of what inspired that. And I think also just what your hopes are for the future of the industry. I mean, being the 397th Black woman, you know, architect period, but then, you know, as a Black woman to step into that role, you know, what you're hopeful for and what you're excited about. I loved hearing you speak about access, and I love to hear you just be encouraging and say, like, it's something that people can have a role in and have a part in, even if they're not necessarily, like, certified. So what you know, what excites you and what do you want to kind of see in the future?
So I felt stifled, which is why I decided to go out on my own. I just felt like I couldn't do all that I know I am as a person. And I've always been a go-getter. I've always been in a position where I've been trying to, like, delegate to allow other people to become who they want to be. And I felt like while I was in corporate, like, I was always at the bottom. And I understand, like, you know, I was at the beginning of my career, but it just felt like I wasn't gonna move at the pace that I needed to for myself or for my community. And so I took the leap of faith to say, you know what, in order to pay off these student loans a little bit faster, in order to be this project manager in my life, like, and have control, I'm gonna try something completely different to try and get a different result, because I felt like going from job to job, I was running into the same issue. And I was just like, if I go to the next job, I'm gonna probably get the same result. So let's just try something completely different. And at the time, I had my credentials, so no one could stop me. And so I don't see myself ever going back. And I also want to, you know, be that light of inspiration, whether someone's staying in corporate or they're going out on their own, to just be able to say, I'm going to take control.
Yeah. And that's so heartening to hear, though, because first of all, you put in like 5 years and some change, and then you get out and you're like, oh. But to say, like, okay, let's flip the script. How can we adjust this? Because I feel like we all have these dream jobs, and you sometimes you get the dream and it's like, it's not.
Man,
that's not
I remember
it.
One job, I was jumping on the bed because I was so happy I got it. And then I was bawling to get out. Like, it was, so I learned my lesson there. Don't get too excited.
Yeah. You know, I want to hear kind of your take on the influence of architecture, design, in mainstream culture too. Like, I think about, you know, Solange's tour with A Seat at the Table back in 2017, was it 2018 too? And just kind of, you see those influences on her style, but also, like, the set design.
Yes.
You know, Virgil right now.
I'm always looking at, like, you know, whether I'm looking at a musician or a movie, like at the end of the credits, I'm always like, who's the set designer? Because I remember one time when I was in college, I would say, oh, I want to be in Hollywood, but I'm an architecture major. So how am I going to work this out? And so I would always say like, oh, I'll do set design. But set design is so particular. It's its own industry. And so a lot of times, you know, architects don't really cross those paths. But I was actually just talking with someone last week about how architects can play a role in set design. For example, like the set design for Black Panther, one of the set designers, she's now the production lead or the producer. I'm sorry, I don't really know the title or whatever. But, you know, she going out to Africa to all these different countries and just looking at the culture and looking at the architecture and having to, like, you know, put that in, you know, to a movie scene. Mm-hmm. And so it's interesting when I see architecture in music and in film because...
And fashion, too. I feel like it's really prevalent in fashion.
So I actually just helped out with a company called Studio 189 that has their garments are made in Ghana. And so, like, I just wanted to connect with them. And so what I did was I reached out to them for Fashion Week and I helped them with producing the show for Fashion Week. You know, I wasn't looking for, like, anything in particular. I was just like, I want to expose myself to this industry to see how I can make that connection. And that's another thing that I'm able to do now that I've created that freedom of time for myself to say, like, oh, I could put some of my work on hold for a couple of days to help out this company to then, you know, learn something outside of my industry.
So it sounds like you're ready to kind of, like, expand that focus to kind of include other things.
Yes, I focus so much that now I can, like, expand.
True. Is there anything that guides you as you kind of, how do you expand without losing that quality of attention?
So still having some sense of focus in the sense of not saying yes to everything because us as Black women, we love to get excited about a lot of stuff and always trying to help someone out. And so I still have to tell myself sometimes, like, you can't do this. And sometimes I say yes and then I have to go back to people and say, I am so sorry, but, like, the way my time is set up right now, I can't actually commit to this. And so I try to do that ahead of time before, like, I get in too deep with people. But being able to still expose myself to many different things, I ask myself these questions, like, how is it helping me as a, how is it helping Studio 397 as a firm? Like, can we potentially see this, you know, become something else where Studio 397 can, you know, expand their design capabilities? Or how is this exposing our community to architecture more? Will this initiative allow other people to, you know, step into these roles? One goal of Studio 397 is to employ interns and employ, like, architects that look like me, that allows us to feel like, you know, we're in a space that we're not the minority, but we're, you know, the majority, or we're just as good.
So. Yeah. Wonderful.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. So you've shared this amazing career journey with us, and we're so appreciative of that. Is there anything you want to impart for someone who's, like, staring down a similar long path, whether it's architecture or something else? Like, any advice for staying the course?
I definitely say remind yourself of why you initially got on this path. To remain persistent and resilient, because sometimes when you're in the thick of things, you don't really see the light at the end of the tunnel. And, you know, I graduated from high school in 2006, and I could literally tell you it was until 2017 I was like, okay, this is finally working itself out. And so it was a long haul. Again, thankfully, like, I was too busy to, like, stop myself, but at the same time, now I have so much freedom, and I wouldn't change my journey for anything. I also try to tell people to respect the journey, because we're always looking for that end result, and we then don't, you know, respect our different
Stages
while you're, you know, on that path. And, you know, at one point in time, like, I felt like I was becoming this miserable, bitter person. And, like, it was reflected on how I communicated with my friends, how I communicated with my family. And because I was so focused on a result, I couldn't, you know, appreciate these certain situations along my path. And, you know, now I used to look at people that looked happy and I would be like, oh, I wonder what that feels like. Because I was just like always nice. So stressed. Or, yeah, I used to sit on the train sometimes like, must be nice to be able to just sit and smile. I'm always like me mugging someone, concentrating. And so I'd encourage people to respect that path respect the journey.
Love it.
Beautiful. Well, Samantha, this has been incredible. Thank you for imparting your wisdom and inspiring us to, I think, all live a slightly more designed and simple life.
Yes.
Where can our listeners kind of connect with you and continue to see all the great work that you're doing?
So you can visit my website at www.studio397architecture.com. I'm also on Instagram at @studio397.
Wonderful.
Awesome. Thanks for stopping by.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you so much for tuning in, and a special, special thank you to our guest, Samantha Josephette.
Yes, thank you, Samantha. Many thanks, of course, to you all, our listeners, for hanging in there with us for three whole years. That's incredible. It's amazing. The final episode of Joblogs will be hitting your feeds very soon, so stay tuned.
Yeah, and definitely talk to us, connect with us around the web at Joblogs and joblogs.com.
I'm Hamas Parker.
And I'm Cleve Out Loud.
We'll see you guys next time.
See ya.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.